Hey, everybody, welcome to the All Stars. I'm Sal, and there's the All Star right here, Joshua Williamson, writer of Superman House of Brainiac, on sale now, folks. Great book. Oh, you
down
have
books.
A copy. Nice.
I have an actual copy of it, yeah. And what's funny is I actually have a copy of part two downstairs, and I'm just too lazy to go down and get it.
I don't blame you, man.
I
was
like,
ask you.
I should have that. Yeah,
we've talked about comics before, but I have to know, and this might be Tale and Tales out of School, so I will I will reserve the right to remove it. But what's the pew pew pew? Because it's so funny to me.
Oh, did I do that?
Yeah, so we're talking about comics, and you're like, oh, comics, pew pew pew, and it's so funny.
I have no idea where that came from.
I was doing it to my wife, and because I have the exact same impulse to be like, it's the Wild West, baby, rootin' tootin'.
That's it. Because comics can be very much the Wild West at times, and I think. I don't know when I did that the first time. I think I was just talking to somebody and I was talking about something really dumb that happened because something dumb happens in comics like every week.
Yes.
And half the stuff that happens never even find out about, thankfully. But you know, you're like, what happened? That person did what? Oh man. And so there are times where you're telling people about like whatever is going on in comics, or you know, you see something, you're like, why are they doing that?
Right.
Or it's that, I don't know. Yeah, and then one day I was just like talking to somebody, and I think I did the gun fingers, and I was like, it was like pew 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 pew. It's supposed to just be like you know, shit's crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
That was sort of what the comics, and then because you know the comics story, we've talked about that. So it's like I just added my own spin to it now, which is the kind of like, oh, you know, comics. And then you're like, pew 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 pew, because it's like it can mean many different things. It can be like, oh man, this is awesome, but for the most part, it means like, man, what a wild time it always is. Right? It's never a boring week. And I it's funny, like I feel like back in January, I made a comment to my wife where I was like, man, I just want some boring ass times. It was funny. Tinian and I were talking about this. James Tinian and I were talking about JT4, as I call him. we were talking about this a few weeks ago, and we were talking about different times at DC. Mm. And we were both going back and forth on like some of the crazy things that have happened in the past. And at one point I was like, we were talking about a bunch of stuff, like a bunch of nutty stuff happened. And I was like, James, you know all that happened in like 1 week, right? That was like a Monday to Monday of lunacy. And he was like, oh no, God. That's not right. And I was like, no, think about it. And I broke it down for him. I'm like, this happened Monday, this happened Tuesday, this happened Wednesday, this happened Thursday. And then that happened the following Monday. And he was like, holy crap. And I'm like, yeah, man, it's never boring. It will never be boring. We were joking around about how it'll never be boring. But, but that's how some of this stuff, the pew, pew, pew came around.
I have to ask you, is there a period? Because like right now, like, you know, obviously the best time for comics is now because you're in it and you're writing it. But like,
yeah.
If you, which era of comics do you think you could easily just slide in and be like, yeah, I could have dominated during this time. Like I could just slide in and like make my mark right here.
I think I look at the different eras of comics that I think would be really interesting to be working in. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would have been really interesting to come in and that moment when Joe Quesada became editor-in-chief at Marvel and they were really experimenting and they were bringing in new talent, you know, and they were like, let's get this Bendis guy who does black and white comics.
Yeah, no offense, we got to get Ron Zimmerman in here, baby.
You know, we should talk about that. I texted you this, right? Did I text you this?
We were talking about...
I liked Ultimate
Adventures. Yeah.
I liked it. It was a weird... It's a fascinating book because... I actually don't remember what came first. If I'm going to say some sacrilegious stuff here in a moment. I don't remember what came first. Did that come first or did All-Star Batman come first? That came first.
All-Star Batman came after it.
Yeah. Also, I really love Duncan Fredago's art.
Oh, so it's like, that art is friggin' great. I love his work. Yeah. And he hates that book, by the way. Like, he has gone on record. Oh, yeah. He's like, well, because Zimmerman didn't know how to, like, trim his work down because he didn't write comic books. Like he'd done a couple of backups for Spider-Man and stuff, and that's it. And so for Zimmerman, like it was just, oh, I'm writing a script because I'm writing for TV basically, and then you'll draw it. And Zimmerman and Figueredo was like, you are doing three types of action in one panel. Like
I think about this a lot when I'm writing scripts. Somebody said before that like I you have to, when you're writing, you have to go back through it and check how many times you say the word "and" in a panel description.
Yeah,
because if the "and" implies other motions, you might be doing it wrong, right?
Like totally.
In terms of characters or "and" in terms of background, but it is like, you know, It's funny though, because in some of them you're like, you know, let's say in a script I say Green Arrow fires an arrow and the arrow hits a apple. That is an and, but you know there are artists
fired that it do that. And yeah, hit can, it. Yeah,
yeah. There's clearly like you there's ways of doing that, right? Yes. So it's really about you and your artist's communication. But yeah, that book is funny because it's basically like, you know, because it was part of that whole contest thing.
The
right?
You Decide, yes.
The You Decide, yeah. So it was like, you know, Captain Marvel, and then it was Marvel, mm-hmm. and then it was that, and it was like, you know, clearly Captain Marvel
won.
Yeah, by far. I mean, that book was also great at that time, you know? Yeah. Like,
and it only got better. You know, that's the thing, is like, because of the contest, because of got better. Like, because David was like playing with it, and he, you know, clearly Peter David was like comfortable where he was and having and feeling himself. He was already established icon Peter David, but when he was under threat, I mean, obviously, like, not to do that episode again, but like, friggin', apparently, I think Jemis went on the internet and was like, these books are getting canceled, and like,
yeah,
and Peter David jumped on and he's like, yeah, first of all, this should be an internal conversation, and secondly, if you say that, now the book will be canceled because no one's going to buy it, because now it has the Red Sea on its chest.
The Red Sea, yeah, dude, it's that stuff gets really complicated and rough. And then it's like, but also I think part of his argument at the time was like, well, you're not advertising it.
Right, right. Well, he was like, you're putting advertising behind books that automatically sell, but not behind the books that don't sell.
Well, he was on, you know, it's funny. I realized this just recently this week that it was like, I didn't realize, you know, time is a funny thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. And especially in comics, like, you kind of forget the timeline of stuff. And, you know, it's funny looking back. I was talking to someone else about this, where it's like, there's only a 12-year difference between Psycho and Godfather.
Right.
And you would think it's a bigger,
like 50 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. 20, you know, at least 20, but it's like, no, it's a 12-year difference. I mean, you're talking about like Rosemary's Baby is like, what, 8 years after Psycho? So it's like, it isn't, it's interesting that how much happened in terms of style, in terms of Hollywood in this thing. And comic books are always the same thing, right? Like, you look at the 80s and you're just like, man, if you look at 81, 89, whew,
oh yeah.
What a difference, man.
What a quantum leap. Whoa, yeah.
You know, like, it is like, whoa, like, this is crazy. And, you know, the same thing, 90s, even the 90s, I feel like are almost balanced in a weird way. Like, yes. There's a weird balance to it. But then if you went from 91 to, say, 2001,
huge.
That is a humongous change in comics. And I think there's these little progressions and stuff. And so to get back to your – oh, so part of that is that, like, Captain Marvel, he went from Hulk to Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, he went boop, boop. And I thought it was, like, years apart. But it was like, no, he went to Captain Marvel after he finished Hulk.
Right.
But I do – so I would say, getting back to your original question, we don't have to talk about Ultimate Adventures too much. even though it was so funny, because I think the logic was like, basically, they were Ultimate Batman. That's pretty
yeah.
doing with Thomer. Like, that was kind of what they were going for in that moment.
Yeah. But also giving it to a humor writer, it was like, so then, yeah.
Yeah, it was weird, though. I don't know the choices of why they were doing. I think there was just relationships there, but.
Well, let me tell you, yeah, it was actually relationships. Been... Yeah.
Was it Joe's relationship or was it Jemis?
Yes, it was Joe. Joe loved Zimmerman. Yeah. Like, Joe was like all in on what Zimmerman was doing and like defended him in freaking message boards and stuff. Like, it was a whole thing.
I didn't know that. Well, so back to your original question, I would say that would be a really cool moment. The 90s would have been interesting. The 90s
you could have done you could have had like an 80 issue run on any character.
Dude, that stuff is crazy when you look back and you think about how long these runs were. I mean, right now it's actually really interesting how there aren't really a lot of long. I'm trying to think right now. I mean, there aren't really too many long runs.
No, and X-Force hit 50 like the other week.
Dude, I know, and that is an accomplishment. Like,
yeah.
Like, bravo to Ben Percy, and I don't think Josh was on that anymore by then. I think he had left a while ago.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, Ben Percy, that and Wolverine.
Wolverine,
like,
yeah.
Was on those books for 50 issues. Like, that is a humongous accomplishment. Like, bravo to Ben Percy.
Agreed.
I was just seeing this the other day when X-Force 50 came out, and I was just like, man, good job.
Dude. Yeah. Like,
so rare right now that people are having long runs on books, and I don't know what has changed, why it's not possible. But when you go back and you look at where it's like, it was like the norm for somebody to be on a book for like 4 or 5 years, you know, and now
totally.
It's like that just isn't the case. And it's interesting, you know. I feel like I'm probably It's like, because even when Nick Spencer was on Amazing, I think he was on Amazing for like 3 years, you know? Maybe.
It wasn't
long. I'm probably the last. I had to think about this. I'm going to toot my own horn here, I guess. I feel like, well, no, Dan Slott is probably the last person to have the last long
reigning run, champ. Right? Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah,
for sure. It has to be him on Spider-Man stuff. I'm like, I'm trying to think of who else there is, but it's funny because like right now, well, we'll get into this in a minute, but I think that would be, there's different moments I think that would be interesting. You know, even at DC, it's like to be, I was around oddly, like I knew people during the Infinite Crisis time period. I knew editors, I knew creators, you know.
Yeah.
I actually had dinner with Jeff the night the Infinite Crisis, I think issue like 4 or 5 came out. It was one of the earlier ones. It was before before issue 5, because issue 5 was when the 1 year later stuff happened.
Oh yeah.
So it's like I knew people in that time period. I think that would have been a fun moment at DC to be doing something, you know. Like even with 1 year later, you know, but I think there's just different moments. Like I think Marvel in the early 2000s, you know, would have been really interesting and stuff. I think that'd be really fun. But the long run thing is funny because it's like I look at, you know, I've been looking at Hickman's work a lot lately, and it's like, you know, I really enjoy Ultimate Spider-Man a lot. Like I think it's a great comic book.
Agreed.
You know, and I've been looking back at his work, and it's like, you know, it's interesting how he actually hasn't done a lot of books, but he has had long runs on those books. So like Fantastic Four, you know, he's got 2 omnibuses of it, right? I think it's 2, you know. And you look at Avengers, and I remember reading Avengers. It's been interesting now because I just made this decision. I don't know how it happened. I think I was like, I did a reread of his Fantastic Four a few years ago, right? So I love Fantastic Four, and there was a few years ago I went on a kick and I was like, I'm gonna read everything again. And so I read just a lot of Fantastic Four.
Do you have a favorite now because of that? Like, what for you is the definitive Fantastic Four era now?
Oh, well, Jack and Stan. I mean, come on.
Jack and Stan.
Like, I mean, you get Jack and Stan, and I love the Walt Simonson stuff, obviously. You know,
me too.
Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of John Byrne stuff, and then it's like, and then obviously Mark and Ringo. Like, yeah. I mean, that is just, it's such a perfect modern. I like the Millar one, and the Hickman one I really liked, and I mean, that stuff with Johnny is so good in that book, and... But so I started rereading Avengers. I don't even know why I made the decision. It was one of those things you just sit down, obviously you find yourself reading a comic book and you're like, all right, fuck it, I'm in. You know? Yep. And so I was like, maybe like a week ago, I started rereading Avengers and New Avengers. And I read them when they were coming out, and I remember them that well. Like, I remember, it's weird. It's a weird thing because I feel like either it's because I'm a different creator, a different person, and I'm older, even though that wasn't that long ago, even though it was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
10 plus years ago, you know. So I started rereading it, and I was like, damn, this is good comic books. Good comic books. Like reading Avengers, and then it's funny because I was reading Avengers and I was like, when should I stop and start reading New Avengers? I don't remember. So I'm reading Avengers, and then all of a sudden Infinity started, and I'm like, okay, now I gotta go back. So I started reading Infinity last night. So I was reading Infinity #1 last night, and that's when I was like, you know what? I'm going all the way to Secret Wars. I was like, I'm gonna do the whole thing. I'm just going for it. But man, that New Avengers comic book is real good. Like I remember reading when it was coming out, but then reading the first 6 issues and like just in one sitting, the
so exciting.
Dude, I was like, man, Hickman, this is just good. Just good book. Just a good book, and it's like, it was just a really interesting moment. And what was funny about it was, you know, it's weird how sometimes you'll read a book when you're in the moment, if you're reading a lot of stuff, it feels like everything is in that moment, right? And then when I read New Avengers, there's lines that are talking about like what's going on in the Marvel Universe in that moment. And I'm like, holy shit, I forgot about all of this stuff. But it still reads, like I can still read it. Like I can still read it and know exactly what's happening. And so I read Infinity like many times because I did the What If Infinity issues.
Yeah. It was
like, and one of those is like that was a really fun project. I got to do different stuff. I got to pick all the artists we worked with, and all the artists were people I knew, like Riley Rossmo, and I did one of them. Mike Henderson, who, you know, did Nailbiter, did one of them. And then, who else was there? It was Jason Copeland, but I did a lot of those, and it was just really fun. I think Mike Norton did one of them with me, and like we were just having a good time. And one of them, one of my favorites is the Guardians of the Galaxy one that we did, and I wrote that like the day I wrote that like the week that Guardians of the Galaxy movie came out, which also dates how long ago this was.
Totally.
So it was like very in my head, and so I really enjoyed writing those. But that meant that I was like, so I was reading Infinity many times,
mm-hmm.
to like make sure I got it right, like many times to make sure I got it right, and was doing what ifs that actually could spin out of story plots in there, right? And it was really it was really fun. And so now I'm like back into it, and it's like now I'm looking at it with a different perspective, you know. I'm just going in as like a fan, just reading it, you know, not so much like
for work like
so I'm reading it because I remember when Infinity was coming out. What's funny is I think they asked me, if I remember correctly, Marvel asked me about the what if Infinity is like while Infinity was still coming out.
Huh.
And so I actually wrote it. I wrote those Infinity books almost a year before they came out.
Oh my God.
And so, but then you go into Secret Wars, and I actually work on Secret Wars too. So it's the same thing where it's like, I did a Secret Wars in some one shots and stuff. So it'll be interesting to like come to it now in perspective on it. But I do miss that. I miss, what's funny is I think there's how do I put this? This might be more of a marketplace and comics conversation, but it's like, I think that when these books have these longer runs, you have this thing where the creator has confidence in the vision that they're doing, right? Like them plus editorial have this plan for what they're doing, and they have confidence in it. And there's something about the work where you know they're telling this big story, and there's a plan, and there's confidence there.
Yeah.
And I think that confidence in those books radiates out, and then the readers also pick up on it. And, you know, I think that's what's been interesting now about not having a lot of long runs. So I'll give you this weird random example. So I don't like watching Netflix TV shows, and this is why. How many get canceled after the first season? You know?
Oh, now?
It's like
too many.
Yeah, now. Too many. Yeah. Yeah, so it's like my problem is that you go into it and it's like I don't have confidence that I'm going to get emotionally invested in this show and then it's never going to end. So it's like I watched all of Three Body Problem. So I watched all of Three Body Problem and I really liked it. And then I was like, I found out that every episode cost $20 million an episode. And I was like, this show, how is this show going to continue? And I read upon it, I'm like, oh, there's three books. That means three seasons. And then when I finished it, it was like midnight when I finished the last episode. And I was like, I rarely binge watch a show, but everybody in my house was sick for a weekend except for me. So I was just, I guess I'm sitting in the living room by myself, binge watching this show. But so I binge watched it and it was like midnight. And then I just went online and I'm like, what happens in the two other books? I'm just going to find out.
Just in case. Yeah.
I'm just going to know now. I just want to finish the story now.
Oh. Oh, no. Hey, I lost.
Okay, sorry. I was gonna say, so yeah, with Three Body Problem, it made me even more aware of the idea that like, oh, I don't know if I want to get invested. And so the problem with that is if you start building up that kind of like lack of confidence basically in the work, and you train people to be like, oh, this might not always be here. Right. I wonder if it is part of the challenges we're having right now is that there isn't these kinds of long runs that you can trust and put faith in and know you're going to get there. You know, it's like, you know, Jason doing Thor for almost, it wasn't almost 10 years, but it was like 8 years, I think.
Yeah,
like
it was
Jason
close. Thor
for a long time. Yeah. I feel like that allows you to have some kind of confidence in it, you know? And I think Rebirth was the last time we had long runs on things. You know, you had Tom on Batman, me on Flash, you know, like Venditti did 50 issues of Green Lantern, but had already done like 30 issues of Green Lantern before that in New 52. Right. So it's like you had these moments where these longer runs, and it's tough because it's like it's so hard to predict right now. Like, can you do these long runs on these books?
Right. Like, I think it has a lot to do with acceptable loss, I think, or at least acceptable standards. Like, it's not that, because
you gotta play the long game, you have to respect the long game. It's a long game,
and you have to have the capital in order to maintain the long game. But like, I think so much corporate approach has been dominated by short-term gains, and no one's immune to it. Like, when it comes to the highest towers,
yeah there's a really weird like lack of patience, which I said it as an interrupt.
Exactly.
But yeah.
No, but you're right. Like it's you nailed it. It's a lack of patience. It's a lack of like just it's all about short-term games. It's all about like lack of patience. People are like in this place where they're like, but what if I'm not here tomorrow? And it's like, dude, one day tomorrow will come and you won't be here.
Like, yeah, no, of course. About yeah. What I you're mean, gonna... there's a weird mix of things. I fall into this too of like my. It's interesting, like working on Energon Universe, and I had this call with Robert and Daniel and Sean, like maybe 2 years ago now. I don't remember when this was. It was when we were really kicking up and we were talking stuff out. So it was a while ago.
Yeah.
As I was writing the outline for Duke, and that was when I think I told you, like, we were in the middle of this call and we're all like, oh, you know, we're doing this Duke book and we're going to do this and this and this. But all of us kept talking about Cobra Commander. And that's when we came up with the idea of like, maybe we should do a Cobra Commander book. Like that was part of that conversation. But in that same conversation, Robert did say something to me. And maybe this is part of why some of the stuff with Energon Universe is working so well right now, is that like, Robert was very much like, we have to have patience. And we have to have, you know, the ability to know that we're going to be doing this for a while. So we don't need to rush certain things.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that bit, and I think maybe that's part of it, because that actually was very freeing for me, right? It made me be like, cool, I can actually let this breathe in a way. I don't feel like, oh God, if I don't do, you know, because Flash was fascinating, because working on Flash, it was like, you know, me and Scott Snyder used to talk about this, some of the creators used to talk about this, where it was like, you have to basically change things up every 6 to 8 months on a book, right? Or 6 to 8 issues. But when I was on Flash, what was crazy was that 6 issues was 3 months.
Oh.
So if you really go back and you look at what I was doing, every 3 months I was changing gears. It was like, here's Gorilla Grodd for 3 months. Here's the Rogues for 3 months. Here's this for 3 months. Here's Professor Zoom for 3 months. It was like every 3 months I was having to change it up.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it was like running a marathon. Like I learned a lot from that experience. But at the same time, it also taught me to not be patient. It's weird. It was a weird mix of things. But I was always playing the long game with certain story points, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in issue one, I knew what I was going to do at the end of the story. Like, I knew, you know, all these pieces. Like, I knew eventually Thawne was going to kill Godspeed. I knew that really early. So it was like all this stuff, this long game for it. But, you know, I do, it's funny. It's like, it's a weird thing to be like, I wish we could have more long runs, because it is unpredictable, right?
Yeah.
Because you're like, you know, I'm looking at these books and like you said, like X-Force and Wolverine.
Yeah.
But then I'm looking at like, yeah, I don't know. What's a long run? And then how do I word this? I'm trying to word this like appreciating something while you have it, I guess. Like you don't even know until the ending. And you're like, oh, that person was on that book for like 5 years. Great.
Like, uh-huh. Well, and yeah, we have such short memories as comic book fans. Like we are, I mean, I was among the people who are like, I mean, you know, I won't even put anybody under the bus. I'm just going to say, if you are currently making comics today and you're there for more than 4 or 5 years on a book, odds are there, the conversation is going to come up in the public gallery. That's sure. It's probably time for them to wrap it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, not, even if it's going well, people are still like, well, but I'm conditioned by the culture to expect this creator to end their run.
Well, also it's also like people age out of books. I mean, that's sort of what it is. I mean, you just because of life, things change out. And I feel like things usually, you know, I look at Transformers a lot, and like Transformers as a brand on the cartoons, they would basically redo it like every 3 to 4 years, you know,
right?
It's max. And it's like, it is a similar thing where it's like, you need to, in a perfect world, what I'm going to explain right now is going to sound really silly. What you want to do is you want someone to start. What I'm going to say right now is going to sound really silly, and it's not a rule or a thing, but it's just an example, okay?
Yeah.
You want to get somebody really into something when they're in, like, middle school, right? Middle school, high school, they have maybe a little bit of money to spend. They're getting their own thing. They're figuring stuff out. And they're kind of like your, in a lot of ways, your ideal audience, right? Like, that's, you know, I was already really into comics when I was in elementary school. By the time I got to middle school, that was me, like, going up on my bike, getting my own stuff, right? You know?
Yeah. You're looking for identity. You're looking for belonging. You're not asking a lot of questions.
Yeah. So here's the thing. You might really get into it. And then by the time you're a freshman in high school, you're like, oh, that is something I read or something I like or a show, whatever. But then by the time you get to be 18, getting out of high school, your life changes. It's one of the reasons why there's so many shows about high school, because it is the last thing that most people have in common, right? Because everyone's lives splinter in crazy directions once they leave high school. Once you turn 18, everything goes fucking nuts.
Right.
And so in that moment, like, I think about comics and the TV shows, you know, that I was reading or watching, and like, I basically didn't watch television for like 2 or 3 years, you know, like show in that window, I totally missed. Like, I ended up watching later, right? And it's the same thing with comic books, where there was a window there where I was still reading, but I wasn't reading as much. And I was like, you know, picking books up a little bit later, you know, but I was much more limited by what I could do in that window. So I think it's a similar thing where you look at that little window there of like, you have that amount of time, you're like maybe 5 years on something, and then it's a good time to switch things up and to you know, make it exciting. Not to say it's not exciting before that, you know.
No,
but then you look at Dan Slott, and he made this like amazing Spider-Man run for 10 years, so what are you gonna do?
Well, that's right. But I mean, and then like you said, like, you switched it up, you know, like right when things were getting comfortable, Superior Spider-Man, and then right after that, Beyond, like, you know, the next thing, which it's not Beyond, it was Parker Industries.
No, Beyond was later. What was Parker Industries called? That was called something else. What was that? There was,
I think it was just All New.
Well, there was also Big Time, right?
Big Time was before that. That was great. You know,
yeah, he created all these little eras for that book, and I think that's also one of the key things to do when you're on these books. You got to create these little milestone eras. He just really played that really, really right, you know. And I said Jason Aaron's a similar thing, and you know, Scott on Batman was like that, because it was like the first year's Quarter Vials, the second year was
Death in the Family or Death of the Family.
Well, it's weird because, like, I think it was 18, right?
Yeah,
and then no, you're right. It was like, it was Quarter Vials, then it was Joker. Then it was
Super Heavy.
Super Heavy came after, and then it was like, well, it was Endgame, and then it was Super Heavy. Right? Am I getting this wrong?
Yes, it had to be. Yeah, because he dies.
Yeah, so it's like, it's really a fascinating moment, and I think that's something people should look at when you're building this stuff out. But I like long runs on books. You know, you look at, again, like Avengers, and you look at Bendis on Avengers, and how he just did this like definitive. Like, crucial. Dude, it's funny to be reading this stuff now, because it's like, clearly Bendis's Avengers run is so crazy influential, and not just on the book, but like on Marvel as a whole, right?
Like, you could see like Bendis kind of like almost learning the math as he's going, where he's like, oh, like this was not the flagship Marvel book. It has become that. It can be the launch pad for events. Like, it'll be the touchstone for Marvel fans to check in to figure out what, like, the pulse is in terms of, like, where...
Dude, that book became the most important Marvel book real fast.
Exactly. Yeah, it doesn't hurt that he also wrote all the events that surrounded it, but, like, and why, another event happened that wasn't by him, it felt completely incongruous to what was going on. Like, Civil War, well, it was the thing that, like, Civil War, without that, you don't have modern Marvel today. You don't have Marvel Cinematic Universe. You don't have, like, a lot of stuff. And when I say that, I don't mean, like, Civil War made the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm talking to the audience. I'm just saying, like, Civil War changed everything.
And it made a ton of money.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was a cool little moment, and it was a cultural moment too, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a moment of conversation. It's like, you know, that is a moment of Marvel history. Like, there's before and after, and that is one of them. It's
exactly still- but Bendis was already changing the game as it was happening, and you could see how he's like, I made the new Avengers, here we go. Oh, they're all gonna fight each other. You could feel that moment where he's like, oh, I gotta change everything right now. We just formed the team, and now they're gonna fight each other.
Yeah, and then he gets to have two books out of it, and then he's able to basically be like, oh, this Skrull thing is why this happened. You know, like, he was, dude, it's crazy. Then, but it's funny reading the Hickman Avengers, because now I'm like, oh, now this also plays a huge part. Like, it's wild reading it now and being like, holy crap, yeah, this is all, man, they must love him. Like, I was just like, dude, yeah, they gotta love him, like, reading this stuff. But
yeah,
long runs, I don't know why we started talking about long runs, but yeah.
Oh, we're talking about, like, what era of comics you want to jump into.
Well, I think, you know, I like long runs, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
Fun when you can sit down and binge read something, you know, like, it's and you see the ups and downs. Like, reading Robert Kirkman's Invincible, I read the pandemic at one point. I just, such an emotional roller coaster at times, you know. That book is so good, and I think it's like a blueprint, I think, for what I think superhero books should be in a lot of ways, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I mean, look at what we've been doing with Cobra Commander, and it's like, I think there's some of that DNA in the book of just like, we're taking this thing. There's this, I've said this to you before, I think, where there's this like Jordan Peele quote where Jordan Peele talks about how you need to take B-movie concepts. His favorite type of genre is basically taking a B-movie concept and doing it as elevated as possible, right?
Totally.
And he always uses Jaws as the example, where it's like Jaws is, you know, it's a movie about a giant shark, and that would be, you know, like that's a B-movie thing, right? It's a giant shark or whatever. But then he took it and he just elevated it as much as possible. And I think that's the kind of stuff that I really gravitate towards, you know? And even when working on Energon Universe, it was like, we took it seriously. You know, we took Cobra Commander seriously. We took Duke seriously. And we're like, okay, we're going to tell this story. And with Cobra Commander, it was like, it's funny with that book because it's very bloody. Yeah. Like, I think people are shocked by how bloody it is. But I was like, well, that's it, though. Like, we're trying to do something different. And we want to, you know. But I plan on being with those characters for a bit. And, yeah, I'm trying to think, what's a long run that's happening right now? I mean, Chip's been on Batman.
Oh my God, right. Years. Yeah, Chip's Batman run is, I mean, like, the Batman runs have attempted to be that, right? Like except with one notable exception, I think around between Jamestown and the Fourth and Chip Zdarsky, I'm not sure why. There was a really short Batman run.
Well, the reason that happened was because we already knew I was going to do the crossover issues. And then, you know, James leaving when he did. So it was like, oh, do you want to just do the four issues before that as well? And I was like, I guess I'm doing that.
Yeah.
I really like that, though, because I was I really liked working with Jorge Molina, and I love the oval costume, so we got to actually do that. And,
you did, yeah.
Yeah, so you have this little window of time. You know, and it's funny, like, I don't know if I'll ever get back to Batman like that, you know, like, full-on like that. I have other goals and stuff I want to do now, and obviously I really enjoy writing Superman. Like, Superman's been really fun, and like we were saying before when we started, it was Action Comics, you know, and the fact that... yeah, Rafa just killed it on this issue, dude. It's so bonkers. This dude is such a maniac. And he turned in some pages this morning. And I was like, man, I love working with Rafa. He's one of my favorite artists to work with. He's very thoughtful. He always goes hard, that dude. Yeah. He's like, always takes it to the next level every time.
What's a good, what's a run that hit 25? Batman Superman World's Finest. From
Aiden
Moore, that one.
Yeah, that's a good
phenomenal book.
The fact that it's been for so long, that's a really good one.
Duggan's been on Invincible Iron Man for about 16, 17 issues now, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, that's what I wonder. Like, I guess would be my question to everybody watching this. Like, what do you consider
a long run? Yeah,
right. Because I'm thinking, like, I don't know, 30, 40 issues, 50 issues. I feel like is where you're like, cool. Right, like 50 issues always feels like that's like an omnibus of stuff, you know. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's funny because I think about how there was a man years ago. We were at a summit and we were talking about this, about long stories, right? Yeah. Like long stories and stuff. And somebody in the room, I'm not sure if I want to say who they are, but somebody in the room, it was a person. It was not a creator and it was not an editor. I'll say. Somebody higher up. They said, you know, Days of Future Past is 2 issues long.
That's true. Yeah.
And it's one of the influential X-Men stories of all time, 2 issues.
Yep.
But part of my argument with them at the moment was like, yes, but the buildup to that, all the pieces were on the table. And yes, I understand it's this crazy time travel story that had not been done, but it's like all of those pieces, you know, with Senator Kelly, with the Sentinels, you know, with Mystique, all of these pieces had been already put on the table to allow those 2 issues to be as good as they are, right?
Yes.
They don't spend a lot of time on exposition explaining to you, you know, 20
who these guys are or why. 15. Yeah.
At the time, it was like, you know, 20 years, not even, my guess was 20 years of X-Men history, right? They were just like, it was already there for you. And I remember talking about this with a person, and they were like, yeah, but it was 2 issues long. and they were like, it haunts me. It haunts me to think about how important 2 issues became. And so it's funny when we talk about this, because I think, you know, also with these long runs, it's always hard because you look at Bendis when he was on Daredevil.
Yeah.
He has this awesome Daredevil run. And the ending, he doesn't give it an ending. He hands it off to Brubaker with like this crazy thing where, you know, Matt is going to prison.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I actually think that was the right way to end it, because part of it's a challenge, and one of the most beautiful things about comics is that these stories never end, right?
That's right.
They never really end. And so it's hard because in a lot of ways you're always in the second act. You can't give characters a third act.
Right.
The books that people love, and I, you know, the ones that really sell forever, the evergreens, those books, they all have endings.
Yep.
They all have endings. And so it's tough sometimes, but I think there's moments where you're like, well, if I can't give it an ending, I have to give it something else. Right. Yes. And I think, you know, you have to, even when I was leaving Flash, you know, the timing was a little bit off because of Death Metal, but the plan was, because even on Flash, I don't consider my last issue of Flash my last issue. My last issue is
Speed Metal.
Yeah. Because that is when Barry says to Wally, like, it's your turn to run. Because to me, I was wrapping up Barry's story so that Wally could take over.
Yeah.
Part of it was always a little bummed because I wanted to write Wally, but then I was like, no, this makes sense. This is the right moment, you know? So I was like, and we had talked about a lot. And I was also very tired. So I was like, you know, I had more stories to tell. And obviously doing stuff with Wally would have been interesting. But yeah. I really love what Jeremy Adams did after that. But to me, that was the ending. It was like, I can't really end this story, but I can sort of do something with it. And that was, okay, Wally is going to be the Flash from now on. Yeah. Right? Like, we knew that. And that was a big part of Infinite Frontier Zero was Barry going like, well, I'm going to go into space. You're going to be the Flash now. Kind of thing, right? And then Jeremy took over after that. So it was like, to me, I feel like that's what you kind of have to do when you're ending these long runs. But it's funny because sometimes you're like, oh, a long run 50 issue, that's amazing. But then sometimes you're just like, man, those four issues are dope. Like, one of my favorite Daryl stories is the well, obviously Frank Miller stuff, but
oh yeah,
Frank Miller, Hunter Mita Jr. doing Man Without Fear.
Oh yeah,
like, five issues, and it has an ending, but then not really because it's the beginning. It's
yeah, but at least it's a self-contained. It's an ended. It's a mini series. Yeah. You know, it's not just like four issues during a 50-issue run. It's like these four. Like
yeah, when you look at something like what you have behind you of All-Star Superman, right. Beginning and you know, and it's one of the best Superman stories. And it's interesting. Like I think about this a lot when I'm thinking about my books of like, you know, how do you get to do all these things? And it is funny because it's like I do think. Sometimes when I look at these books that I'm even working on, I do think about the possibility of like, am I never going to write this character again? Mm-hmm. You know, never going to have, you know, because on Flash, when I was on Flash, there was a conversation early on where it was around, it was before issue 25 had come out. So it was a good while ahead. And I think, yeah, it was before 25 had come out and they were like, one of the editors said, they were like, we think issue 38 is going to be your last issue on Flash. Okay. And when he said that, in that moment, I was like, at first I was like, okay. Because I didn't, you know, also where I was in my career, I didn't know what to say. But then I was like, no, I have so much more story to tell. Like, so much more story to tell. Yeah. And that was when I pitched Flash War, which is what basically was like what solidified, okay, I have this big story to tell. They're going to let me tell it. Right. Like I laid out the whole plan for the 100 issues. This is the story I want to do about Barry and Thawne and everybody. And they were like, cool, we'll do that. Right.
Good.
But it took that moment. But that was it. It was that moment of like, oh, no, I have more to go. And it's interesting when you're working on these characters, you do have those moments of like, you know, I wasn't ready to go. So that was big piece. But it is that thing of like, oh, man, am I never going to make this character again? What do I have to say about it? You know, it's like. Yeah. What's that thing that I want to do with that character? It's interesting. And it's also interesting to think about, like, there are probably characters in comics I will probably never write, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you get a shot, you know,
take it.
Absolutely. Go and do something crazy with it. But yeah. What other questions do you have then?
Oh, yeah.
We spent a lot of time talking about what era in comics. Is there an era of comics that you were like, man, I wish I was, like, around in that moment? Like, are you like, that's
well, like, you know,
be a fly on the wall. Like there's times where I like I would love to be a fly on the wall during the 80s, particularly like 84 to 87. Just be the wall and just sit there and listen and just be like, how are these conversations? What is the oral history of some of this stuff? I would love some of that. Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. The oral history thing always haunts me because like what we're essentially doing now, what we've been able to do thanks to technology and telecommuting is like we can record these ideas, these concepts for posterity or just for our own edification. And you know, I'm a big proponent. I remember as a kid, I skipped them every single time, but sometimes, you know, when you're a kid and you're like in middle school and you have a comic book, you don't get to go out and get more comic books. You are at the mercy of other people. So you read that comic book, especially if you don't, let's say, have a cell phone, if you were, you know, or your video game device is, you know, a Genesis or something. It's like, you're not going to be able to, like, compete with the comic book. So you read it over and over again. So I conditioned myself to read, like, the forewords and afterwards in trade paperbacks that normally would be, like, I don't know who they're for, you know, for the people who publish them, maybe, because most of the time they're skipped over. But there's some gold in there. There's some stories in there. There's stuff in, like, some of these forewords that, like, I used as, like, you know, a foundation to start interviews, where I'd say, in 1991, you said this. And they were like, no, I didn't. And I'm like, yeah, you did. You said it right here. You know, I can say this. Jim Salicrup wrote the foreword for Spider-Man Torment. And he talked about how he's like, you know, Todd didn't want the Lizard. He wanted other characters like Green Goblin. And so I mentioned that in my interview with him. This is going back 10 years. But I was like, you know, I was like, apparently you wanted Todd to draw Green Goblin instead of a Lizard. And he's like, no. And I'm like, well, in 1992, you did.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love it.
You know, and it's like, that's the kind of posterity that I really appreciate, because, like, the time changes your perspective. But, like, I like getting people's opinion, like, as it's happening. Because,
there's a recording of it, and then you know where it's changed down the line. Like, I know my opinion on comics, obviously, has changed.
Same.
Dude, like, when I was in my early 20s, I mean, I definitely had a very different opinion of comics than I do now. Like, just. Yeah. By far, you know, it's like, I would love to have some of that, but it is funny. Like, I think I told you that story where I, a couple of years ago, God, when was this? This is a long time ago. I was like, one night really late, I started texting. I got to a story before. I started texting Bendis questions about Secret Invasion. And I was just like texting him questions about the event and lead into it. And this is when I did the reread of that Avengers run.
Yeah.
And so I was like texting him questions about it. And I remember him being like basically he was kind of like, what are you talking about? Why are we talking about this? He was like, he answered a couple, but then he was just like, we should be talking about DC stuff, right? That's happening right now. And I was like, Yeah. Okay, but what about
yeah?
I was like, my little nerdy thing.
I do the same thing.
You know, I was talking to. It is funny sometimes, like talking to different creators now, you know, about their books, like really afterward, and it's like
10, 20 years removed, and it's like their opinions have changed, and some of them have gotten more honest, or some of them have gotten less honest, and so it's fun to have like a record as it's happening, and I'm like, dude, I would have loved to have sat down with people, especially like during the, I mean, that's where those forewards and afterwards, you know, are super awesome, but you know, that the modern equivalent of that, because they don't do that now, and I'm like, I'm lamenting, and I feel like that's something that I would like to see return. But the alternative is like third party podcasts and stuff where because, you know, like I don't trust like corporate documentaries when it comes to that. Like, you know, when Disney made their like documentaries of the making of The Force Awakens, and like everyone's just thrilled, everyone's happy, blah, 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 blah. And you're like,
you want the perspective from time.
Well, that, and I want like a third party. Like, I want to see like the documentary of the making of The Phantom Menace, because George Lucas is not, he doesn't have a studio, it's him. So there's sequences of him just like watching Phantom Menace going like, oh my God, what have I done?
Oh, jeez.
And like, I want to see those moments, because like, you know, you remember how, have you heard the story about how The Emperor's New Groove was originally a crazy-ass movie?
I am well aware of it. There's that documentary, what it was, Empire of the Sun?
Right? Yeah, yeah, his Sting's wife made.
I have it saved to watch, and I haven't watched it yet, but I am aware it exists.
Right, but that documentary, like Disney was like, don't, like they did not want any documentary, like, because I'm like, but that's fascinating, because The Emperor's New Groove is cool, and I'm like, I'm happy it was made, so like, you know, it all worked out.
Well, yeah, it all worked out. My wife loves that one, and I'm like, now when I watch it, all I can think about is what was there before, and I think about like there is a whole album of Sting songs, you know.
They're just sitting there.
I've always been curious about that one. That is a good example.
But like, wouldn't you love to have a documentary or a podcast series of what it was like to make The Dark Knight Strikes Again?
Oh, have like, yes. Yeah, I think about this. I was thinking about this with Jurgens, actually, because like, oh, I think Superman. Jurgens, if did, yeah, yeah, because I've talked to Dan about Death of Superman a few times, and you know, that is something that I think, and I think that somebody has done oral histories, but that stuff I would love is like edited. So one of my favorite documentaries about film is the one that is just called De Palma. And in that one, what's great about it is that they took Brian De Palma, they put him on a chair, and then they put the camera on him, right? Yes. And they were like, we're going to go in chronological order, and we're just going to talk about every movie.
Yeah.
And what was going on in that moment. So, you know, he talks about Star Wars, he talks about Indiana Jones, he talks about Scarface, he talks about how, you know, Steven Spielberg actually directed some scenes in Scarface.
Really?
And yeah, this is the Spielberg documentary is really good too. That one is amazing. That one's amazing too. That one is very emotional. It is very good. I think anybody who wants to work in comics or as a creative person in any way, shape, or form, watch the Spielberg one, watch the De Palma one. They're very different.
Yeah.
But the De Palma one, part of why the Spielberg one is it's very Spielberg, right? So it's like it's a bit bigger
and polished.
Yeah. But the De Palma one is great because they just put the camera on the De Palma and he just talks about basically all the movies in chronological order, and he is super honest, and he has all these great insights into it, and he talks about what he likes, he didn't like, he talks about what was influencing certain things, talks about his past and how things in his past would influence things, and it is fucking fascinating. And I think that's something I kind of wish we had in comics. Like, I would love to, I think Brian would actually be a good example of that, like to put Bendis down and be like, we're gonna talk about everything starting with
Jinx
or Goldfish, maybe even like Fortune and Glory. He's kind of doing that though, because you have Fortune and Glory and then you have Fortune and Glory 2,
right?
About the Spider-Man musical. But it's like, I would love to be like, all right, let's just, you know, sit down and be like, let's just call it Bendis.
Yeah. They did John Suntress has the Word Balloon Bendis tapes. And
that is probably the best example of that right now. But right? I think those are all in the moment.
They're in the moment. Yeah.
Oh, so I wonder, I haven't watched those in a while. Tom listens to them all the time. I haven't watched one of those in a while. So I'm curious if how much they do, like, let's talk about the past versus the now kind of thing.
That's a pitch to John to be like, do the Bendis tapes too, and just go, like, we're going to go back and just do them again.
Oh, and revisit. Well, they still do it. They still do them. I don't think that's not true. A thing, but, like, I think it would be interesting to get to that. But also, I'm trying to think of other creators that I would love to just be like, Jurgens would be interesting to just talk about 90s Superman with him.
Yeah, Wolfman would be cool to talk about Crisis.
Oh, Wolfman would be great. Yeah, Wolfman would be really interesting to have that kind of perspective on it. I think part of it is that, like, sometimes you talk about this, not everybody is ready for that level of
honesty. The bodies are still not all buried.
Yeah, it's tough, because I always deal with this too, where it's like, there's books that I worked on that I am unhappy with. I'm not going to say what they are, but there's books I've worked on that I'm unhappy with. And it's like, you know, part of the problem is that I know a lot of people work on those books. Yeah. And it's like, they were maybe putting something into it more than I was, or there was a moment where they loved it. You know, maybe it was a better experience, and I'm also incredibly hard on myself and my work. Mm-hmm. So it's hard sometimes where somebody's like, I love working on this. And I'm like, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. I'm not satisfied.
I would change so much, but you know, I have another meeting to jump into here. Today's gonna be a long day of Zoom, spoiler, let me tell you. We should talk about what we're gonna do. We should talk about that, let everybody know what we're doing in May.
Yeah. Folks, what do you guys do in Free Comic Book Day? Well, the day before Free Comic Book Day, the day before May 3rd, while you're ramping up for your sojourn to get comics on Free Comic Book Day, you should hang out with me and Josh, because we're going to be doing a massive All-Stars live stream starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 10 a.m. PST. Here on this channel, Comic Pop Returns, we're going to be chatting live, taking your questions. Yeah. We're gonna be talking about comic books, pew pew pew. And we're gonna have a couple special guests who probably don't even know that they're gonna be special guests.
We're not
even
gonna ask them. We'll ask them. But we'll you know, it'll be you and I and possibly some other people. We're just gonna talk about comics for a live and for a while.
Yes, it's gonna be a multi-hour
Like, this one's like 45 minutes, mostly because Sal and I spent an hour bullshitting before we started recording.
It's true.
And then I have to go to another Zoom meeting and talk about DC stuff.
We've blocked off time. This is a huge.
This is a big one. This is like I'm taking the day off from work, so I can sit here and hang out with Sal. And we can talk about comics. And then one of my missions in life is to convince Sal that he should watch wrestling.
That's going to come up. Yeah, WrestleMania.
It might come up WrestleMania. Yeah, WrestleMania just passed, and maybe we'll talk about that too. And
no doubt.
Talk about how comics and wrestling are, you know, brother and sister sometimes. So.
Oh, they are. I was surprised to find that like. Very early on, where I was like, yeah, I didn't put them together. And then you think about it for 2 seconds, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I get
that. No, the story logic is very similar between the two. Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. Anyway, we'll save that for then.
Right. You know, so that's happening in May, May 3rd. So keep an eye out, folks. We're going to tease it and post stuff about it leading up to
we'll
it.
Yeah, we'll post things. Yeah, we'll do a whole thing. And then, you know, we'll talk about some stuff. And who knows what we'll talk about. There might be some other news around that time. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
You know, we might be able to talk about what's going on in the world of comics and stuff that I'm working on. You know, there might be some fun stuff we can chat up in those, you know, in that long period of time we're doing a live show. I have some.
Yeah, ideas. No, it's true. And Josh and I both have the problem where it's like, oh, I love answering questions. I love going long into an in-depth topic. So you're probably going to pull a lot of stuff out of the show. Folks.
Oh, yeah. And if you, depending on the questions and stuff, we'll see how deep we get into, and get into things. But it'll be a good time. So we'll see you in a few weeks.
That's right. Stay tuned, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Josh, what's coming out between then and now? That you think we should check out besides House of Brainiac, of course, but House of Brainiac.
Look at this. Yeah, so House of Brainiac. I still do Green Arrow. You know, Batman and Robin is coming out. You know, Duke and Cobra Commander will be. Cobra Commander 5 will not be out by then, but Duke 5 will be out by then. But the big thing, you know, I have the Energon Universe special that is coming out on Free Comic Book Day. So I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit too, and that'll be really exciting. And I think people definitely need to check that book out. So we'll probably end up talking about that a little bit too.
Undoubtedly. So stay tuned for that. But thank you all for being here. Thank you, Josh, for doing the show. And we'll see you guys next time. So long, everybody.
Thank you.